Humongous, the Lord Humongous, the Warrior of the Wasteland, the Alatoa of Rock and Roll.
I am gravely disappointed. Again, you have made me unleash my gods of war. Look at what remains of your gallant scout. Why? Because you are selfish. You hoard your alcohol. You will not listen to reason. Now, my prisoners say, you plan to spend the whole weekend partying in the wasteland. You send them out this morning to find more liquor. A hall big enough to fill the Atomic Cafe. What a great plan. Look around you. I, the Humongous, have single-handedly united the gangs of the Wasteland. The Mohawk Bikers. The Smegma Crazies. The Skinheads. And the Berserkers. They like to party too. The Humongous will not be defied.
Give them nothing! Drink it all!
Yeah! When? No, easy. Be still, my dog of war. I understand your thirst. We're all looking for a good time. But we do it my way. We do it my way. The libation will be ours. Then you shall get your party on. Quiet! Quiet! No more games! No more games! We are here for a purpose! We come with an offer!
No! No more talk! We go in! We drink! We drink it all!
There has been too much violence, too much pain. None here are without thirst, but I have an honorable compromise. Just open the gate, share with us the liquor, the entertainment, the gambling, the whole event, and I spare you lives. Just open the gate. I promise to share our bottle caps with all Wastelanders. Just open the gate and let begin Wasteland Weekend! I await your answer.
What say you, Wastelanders? Shall we let them in?
Welcome back, everyone, to this 53rd episode of Through the Aftermath. I'm your host, Sean, and once again, I'm joined by my co-host, Jonathan. How you doing, Jonathan? Jonathan? Hey, John, can you hear me? Wait a minute. I think I remember him saying that he was going to go out and fetch some of that Blamco mac and cheese from the vacant bunker next door. Oh, crap. You know what? I think I may have forgotten to tell him about the mines that I set. Well, I'm sure he's fine. But anyway, I have a fun episode in store for you this time with a very special guest named Mr. Jim the Tank Dorsey. Now, Tank is best known for his depiction of Lord Humongous at various costume conventions, and more importantly, as the unofficial master of ceremonies at Wasteland Weekend held in L.A. each year. And you know that clip you heard at the beginning of this episode? That was Tank ringing in the 2014 Wasteland Weekend event. So I thought, you know, who better to have on the show and talk about, you know, his costumes, Wasteland Weekend, what he does, and just his whole outlook on the post-apocalyptic genre. I think it was really important to get him on here. So, decided to have him on the show and do this little interview, and I hope you all enjoy. All right, we are here with Jim the Tank Dorsey, and I am very happy to have you on the show. Thanks for coming on, Jim.
My pleasure.
And what we're going to do is we're going to talk all about some of the characters that Jim plays. I mean, of course, there's Lord Humongous, and Jim and I were in a Dreadnoughts group at Dragon Con this year. He was Road Pig, I was Torch. I mean, it was a blast, and these are some of the things we're going to talk about. And I wanted to get him on the show because I think that what he does has been, it's so accurate, first of all. I mean, the guy knows everything there is to, you know, about the character, and he's it. You know, he's Lord Humongous, and I love it. So I wanted to talk to you about that and just kind of what you do and everything. So let's start out. Just give a little bit of an intro to yourself, your history, you know, how you got into all this.
I had an interest in cosplay at a very early age, you know, long before cosplay was ever even a word, really. Halloween was always my favorite holiday, getting a chance to dress up, make my own costumes even as a kid, and just kind of be somebody else for an evening. I think a lot of that just stemmed from being a chronic daydreamer. Of course, I read a lot of comic books as a kid. I went to comic book conventions, and I had this idea kicking around in the back of my head, even, you know, 6th, 7th, 8th grade, of dressing up like my comic book heroes, Judge Dredd, The Punisher, Grimjack, Martial Law. But I didn't have the skills or resources to pull off anything like that, and the thought of a kid dressed up as any of those characters, I thought was just going to look kind of silly, so it never came to fruition. In high school, I began playing dress-up, if you will, on a daily basis as I embraced the punk scene. I went for the scary look of bands like the Misfits and Samhain or Salon. And that was certainly interesting. But my first, I guess you could say, official strain-accurate costume was for a book report I did for English class my senior year. We were given a list of books to choose from, and we had to do a written report as well as a visual presentation. And the book that I chose on the list was Anthony Burgess's A Clockwork Orange. So I did the written report, and I dressed up as the Droopy Alex for my presentation. Got an A on the project, but the costume got me suspended from school for wearing the jock strap on the outside of my pants, which I thought was pretty cool at the time. Looking back, I just got a laugh, I suppose.
Yeah.
Since those days, my costuming hobby has just absolutely exploded in recent years. I've mostly been focused on string-accurate replicas from the Mad Max trilogy, of which I think at this point I have about 15 costumes, plus a couple more from the new movie. But I branched out into other areas, mainly due to requests from other people to be parts of cosplay groups. Characters like you mentioned, Road Pig, for the Dreadnought group, which has now become another character that I'm very well known for. Ivan Drago from Rocky IV that I did with Lon Brown, who does an amazing Rocky. We just kind of threw that together for Dragon Con last year, and it ended up being a huge hit. I was asked to do the Uber Immortal from 300 for a group of Spartans. I threw together the Russian from the Punisher, Guile from Street Fighter. Just fun little stuff like that. Soon, hopefully this year, I'll have Conan the Destroyer done and possibly Roy Batty from Blade Runner as well. I still have plans to finish a martial law costume one of these years. I got the hat done about 15 years ago, and that's as far as I got. And eventually I'd really like to do a Judge Dredd costume, both comic book and new movie versions.
Wow. So you're a busy guy, it sounds like.
I rarely sleep, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I think all of these are so interesting, especially the fact that they're so varied. You know, you have such a variable there. And but I think that, you know, the one thing that a lot of people know you best for is Lord Humongous. And the whole post-apocalyptic thing, you know, it's growing. I mean, it's getting huge now, and it's been huge for a long time, especially to people like us who have always loved it. But it's really especially getting big. Can you talk a little bit about your earliest memories of taking an interest to post-apocalyptic?
Sure. I remember it very well, actually. My dad bought me a copy of Starlog number 61, because it had, written across the top, sneak peek at Revenge of the Jedi. It was so, you know, it knew it was still being called Revenge of the Jedi. I was a huge Star Wars fan as a kid, and still am, so my dad bought this home for me. And, yeah, the Star Wars stuff was cool, but in this issue were articles and other, you know, soon-to-be classics of the day, like Wrath of Khan, Conan the Barbarian, Megaforce, and, of course, the Road Warrior. It was the images from the Road Warrior that really caught my attention. I don't think I've even read the article as a kid. I still have a copy of the magazine here in my collection. And I have, of course, since read the article. But I spent plenty of time looking at those images and just letting my imagination soar. And the Road Warrior like instantly became my favorite movie, even though it would be a year or more before I was able to even watch it. I wasn't allowed to watch rated R movies as a kid. But when it came on TV, I remember it was it came out at like 9 o'clock at night or something like that, which was my bedtime in seventh or eighth grade, whatever time frame this was. And I was only allowed to watch it for the first commercial break. So I got up to the opening chase scene, and that was about it. But that was all it took. I mean, I was hooked, and I knew enough about the movie before I ever even saw the rest of it to try and make my own role playing game based on it, complete with metal boomerangs with razor sharp edges and happy stuff like that. As I got older, though, I spent a lot of weekends over at my best friend's house, and we would stay up all night painting models and watching rented VHS tapes of Mad Max and The Road Warrior, unbeknownst to my parents, obviously. But my dad took me to see Beyond Thunderdome in the theater, which, even though that is the weakest film, in many opinions, of the trilogy, it was still a very monumental occasion for me as a kid. Once I had copies of the movies on VHS, or actually Betamax back then, I would spend hours in front of the TV just trying to pause clear shots, which is impossible with a VHS tape, so I could draw pictures of the vehicles, trying to figure out what kind of cars these cop cars were. They were amazing. I would spend my days in class drawing pictures of the costumes from the Road Warrior, Lord Humongous, the Berserkers, of course, instead of doing my schoolwork. And in fact, when I would get bored, especially in history class, remember my freshman year in high school, I would sit there and recite the entire script for Mad Max in my head, word for word. Little OCD, I'll admit, but got me through the day. But from this love of the Mad Max mythos, I ventured into other related films, like obviously Death Race 2000, its inspiration, Damnation Alley, and a whole slew of other, you know, bad Italian knockoffs. But ultimately, the story of Max Rockatansky always stayed nearest and dearest to my heart.
Yeah, I definitely know what you're talking about. And especially, like, you know, The Road Warrior, it was such an iconic movie.
Totally.
And that character of Lord Humongous, I mean, if there ever is a kind of iconic villain, especially throughout all of the trilogy, you know, he's it. Everyone thinks of that. Everyone talks about that. And I think that it's amazing how well you do it. So can you tell us a little bit about how you have become that character?
Sure. My first Mad Max-related costume I put together in 1997. I was working for the band The Misfits at the time. I was their merchandiser. And we had a big show coming up in L.A. at the Palace on Halloween night, so I wanted to put together a really, like, over-the-top costume. So I chose the most recognizable character I could, and I did Max from The Road Warrior, which was kind of a no-brainer. A lot of work went into the costume at the time. It was instantly recognizable, but it was far from screen accurate. That term didn't even really exist back then, as the internet was still in its infancy. It got, you know, worn for that. It was a big hit. I wore it for a few more Halloweens over the years. But it wasn't until the first Wasteland Weekend event that I attended in 2010, which was the first official Wasteland Weekend, that it came out of storage with a very specific purpose. Once I heard about this Mad Max-themed event being held out in the Mojave Desert, I finally put together a screen-accurate MFP uniform, something I've been thinking about doing for several years, just didn't have the money to do it, but I went ahead and made it happen, to wear that and my Rogue Warrior costume out there. There was quite a solid MFP turnout at this event, so I was instantly hooked, and I knew it. But there were better Rogue Warrior costumes than mine. Like I said, mine wasn't totally screen accurate. You just knew what it was. So it was kind of embarrassing. I never even took it out of my bag to put it on. I just stayed in my MFP uniform all weekend. It was about a year later that I actually revamped that costume to make it one of the, probably one of the most screen accurate in the world, as far as I know, which is, of course, a bit of a financial commitment there. But a friend of mine that I camped with at this event, getting around to this finally, kept saying that, you know, when you come back next year in 2011, you need to come back as the Lord Humongous. He insisted that I was the only guy there big enough to pull it off. I was about 265 pounds at the time, coming in at 6'1". But I was not in the kind of shape needed to pull the character off, so I just dismissed it. I mean, yeah, I was big, but I was not. I didn't look good with my shirt off kind of thing. After I got home from the event, he sent me a link to an eBay auction for the Cooper HM6 Hockey Goalie mask, which is the exact mask used in the movie. And like the stars aligned and fate stepped in and just kind of kicked my butt right out the door and said, you got to do this. It's happening. I began training and eating right in order to drop the weight that I needed to lose. Which was totally foreign to me, as I'd always trained for mass and strength with my background in pro wrestling, so I was going the other direction for once. Luckily, one of my customers, I own a swimming pool service and repair business, but one of my customers is a former bodybuilder who set me on the right path to dropping the weight I needed in order to look even bigger, which was a foreign concept to me. You've got to lose weight to look bigger, and yeah, it actually does work. In the meantime, I began working on the costumes. I found the correct vintage Vietnam-era boots that he wore, lacing them up the right way with the variety of ropes that are used. I made the neck brace from scratch, which was actually quite a feat of engineering, actually. When I showed that to Adrian Bennett, the owner of the Mad Max Museum down in Australia, he was totally enthralled with this thing, because he had done a Lord Humongous mannequin in the museum. But he just used like spray foam or something, chipped away at it and kind of sculpted it out. But this is an actual functional brace that opens up, and he thought that was pretty cool. So that was an honor. I found the suitable leather hot pants, of course, and the appropriate contact lenses for the right look. A few of the pieces, however, I commissioned from experts in their fields instead of trying my own hand at them. Not that I couldn't do it myself, but I knew there were better people qualified to do it, and I wanted to take this all the way, 110%. So I turned to my buddy Ashton Finn of Nightcraft Leatherworks to make the S&M body harness and the gauntlets. He had done a lot of work for the Misfits in the past, so I knew all his leather work was just, you know, over the top. He'd also made my MFP shoulder holster, and it was just dead on accurate. I had my buddy Jake paint the mask for me. He used to be a professional model painter for Games Workshop, who's won, you know, many Golden Demon and Slayer Sword trophies at several of the Games Day events. Even with his skills, it took him 3 tries to get the mask just right, but he, of course, nailed it too. And lastly, I turned to my old friend, Glenn Hetrick, who I also knew through the Misfits. Now he's famous for being the lead judge on Sci-Fi Channel's Face Off. But I got some bald caps from him, and he gave me tips on how to make the scars and how to punch the hair in and all that tedious work. So after a year of preparation, I made my goal weight of 205 pounds. I dropped 60 pounds. I had to shave my body from head to toe, go and get a fake tan, because I'm about as pale as a ghost with the scaly skin that I've got. And I headed out to the wasteland. There was only myself and a couple of key individuals that run the event that knew that this was coming. So we made sure we kept it under wraps, but we made a very big deal about unveiling the character to the crowd Friday evening when the event actually kicked off. But none of us knew what to expect. So when we pulled up in the rig and there was the crowd and I stand up into the spotlight, the whole place just went totally freaking berserk. And it was at that moment we knew we were onto something big, like really big, and it has just grown exponentially, I think, since that day. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah, you can tell. I mean, I've seen the videos where you do the opening ceremony for Wasteland Weekend, and it's amazing because it's so much like... It's in the spirit of the movie, you know, and you change it to be more appropriate for the weekend itself, but it's right there, you know. It makes sense, and it's funny, and it's just great. I just love it. Yeah,
I love throwing the humor in there.
Exactly. So I mean, so you have Wasteland Weekend. We talked about Dragon Con. What all the conventions do you attend as Lord Humongous?
Let's see, besides Wasteland Weekend, which is definitely my main gig every year, that's at the end of September out in the Mojave Desert. I've kind of become their unofficial leader of the attendees now. But I've been invited to the Mad Max Silverton Collective in Australia. This event is held every other year in the outback where the Road Warrior was filmed, and that the Mad Max 2 Museum that I mentioned before is located. So I was there 2 years ago, and it's coming up again this March. While I was down there, I got to drive the Australian Humongous machine as Lord Humongous on the very same roads that the Road Warrior was filmed on. So you want to talk about a bucket list moment. I mean, man, that was it. That was really freaking cool. We had a really solid showing at Dragon Con 2013 with a sizable Road Warrior cosplay group. Max Wolfpack brought down his Humongous machine for me to drive in the parade. There are two that I know of in existence. Max is here in the U.S. and then the Australian labs. I think I'm the only guy that's driven both of them. But in that parade, every time we stopped and I got to stand up and flex for the crowd, again, everybody went friggin' nuts. It was amazing. I've also attended San Diego Comic-Con, New York Comic-Con, as well as some local, like a legendary local horror convention here in New Jersey called Show of Theater. I've done some other small appearances for things like haunted houses, but the reception's always best at conventions. I've been in a few fan films, like you had mentioned, with some of the Wasteland Weekend highlights and stuff, but there's Mad Max, A Wasteland Story, which is on YouTube. It's pretty funny, but professionally done, written and directed by my good friend and another fellow Wastelander, Paul Miller. I've been in a music video called Mel Gibson by a band from Brooklyn called Onward Chariots, where I portrayed both versions of Max, Mad Max and Road Warrior, as well as a cameo from Lord Humongous. That was a lot of fun. There's an actual fight scene at the end of the video where I'm kicking the crap out of the band, and I've never actually met the guys. It was all done digitally, and you'd swear I'm full-on wailing on them. But that was that's a funny one. That's worth looking up. And then a variety of other videos. The wedding that I did at Wasteland Weekend 2013, again, going back to taking lines from the movie, but making it apply to whatever situation we're doing out there, and making it a little humorous. The LA Times came out and did a bit of info on that. And yes, I am actually an ordained minister, so I can officially do weddings. I've been interviewed at various conventions and things all over the years. But that's the main things I would say are Wasteland Weekend, Dragon Con, Silverton Collective, New York Comic Con. San Diego, not as much, just because it's West Coast and I'm Jersey-based, so it's not as easy for me to get out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, so Wasteland Weekend itself, I'm making it a bucket list goal to get out there, hopefully this year, one of these times. I have to get out there. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of people out there who don't know what it is. Can you explain a little bit about it?
I can certainly try. It's a lot to encompass. For those who don't know, I try to explain Wasteland Weekend as such. Imagine going to the Ren Fair But instead of going back into time, you're going into a not too distant future. And instead of reveling in libation and merriment, you are facing something bleak and desolate. That's not to say we don't have loads of fun camping out in the desert for 4 days. I mean, it's open bar. I mean, it doesn't get much more fun than that. But the major difference between a Ren Fair and Wasteland Weekend is that costumes are not an option. They're required. When I'm not parading around as Lord Humongous at the event, I'm on the elite guard. If you think of the Horsehair Mohawk guards from Bartertown in Beyond Thunderdome, that's what we recreate. Our job is to guard the gates of what we call Wasteland City, which is pretty much a post-apocalyptic fortress that we build in the middle of the desert. But we don't provide actual security. There are real police officers and that sort of thing there for such things. Our job is more for atmosphere through intimidation and something called guarditude. But one of our true functions is that we will stop anyone walking through the gates that is not appropriately attired. If you don't look the part, you can't come in. We'll send you over to what we call the body shop to get kitted out with some donated, used sporting equipment, military gear, some tattered clothing. You get face paint. You can even get your head shaved into a mohawk, whatever you need to look post-apocalyptic. In fact, this is a story I like to share. A couple of years ago, the company that is producing the new Mad Max video game sent a production team in to do some filming inside our compound. They came to the gates wearing, jeans and T-shirts kind of stuff, sneakers, and they were stopped at the gates, and despite the fact that they were not official attendees, and they figured they were somebody pretty important, they still had to be sent to the body shop to look the parts. So they came back with bandoliers on and bandanas and some shoulder pads and stuff. So, okay, you can come in now. But the point is that once you walk through the gates of Wasteland, you are completely submerged into a nihilistic future with 360 degrees of just total immersion. You can completely suspend all disbelief. And once you're inside, you can barter with many of the vendors. You can do some gambling at the Last Chance Casino, where bottle caps are the currency. You can go see the Rust Devils and sign up for the very popular bounty hunting game. You can try your hand at archery or throwing a boomerang. When the evening comes, the bands and DJs start to play. There's a burlesque show. The Atomic Cafe opens, which is where all the drinking happens. Liquor is donated to that enough to inebriate the masses. But you'll find some of the most amazingly creative people out in this blighted place, from the costumes to the vehicles to the camps. It's just truly awe-inspiring, the level of creativity that's brought to this event. And it's grown from being, a paid event. First time I went, I think it was 350 people, something like that. Now we have about 2,500, I think, last year. But there's a camaraderie. There's a family feeling that you get that's really hard to find anywhere else. And I think that's what really brings people back.
Yeah. I've heard a lot of people, when they leave there, they're like, these are the people that I've always meant to hang around. This is my family that I've always felt like, I've been missing or something. It's amazing to me. That's another, I want to go out there. I'm actually working on a car right now, but I want to go out there with the car. I want to go out there with the costume. Mm-hmm. I want to do that. Mm-hmm. But on a whole different level, you have the camaraderie that you said, and that's, mm-hmm. that's amazing to me. Definitely this year. I'm going to shoot Good. For it. It's going to be a thing.
All right, I'm going to hold you to that.
So we've got, let's see, you said that the rising popularity of Wasteland Weekend itself growing up to 2,500, and I can't imagine what it's going to be this year. Especially the Mad Max movies coming out and all this stuff. So the popularity of post-apocalyptic in general has just grown. It's mm-hmm. back to where we were in the 80s. And I'm really inspired by that. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I'm glad to see that it's finally coming into the mainstream full force. I know there are many people who resist such a direction, but I embrace it because now I'm afforded many more opportunities to share my passion with more and more people. I've got more places to wear my costumes and show off my vehicles. You mentioned vehicles. I have five Mad Max vehicles in all. I've got three motorcycles in various stages of complete or not complete. I've got Goslin one from Mad Max, the police bike. I've got Wes's bike from the Road Warrior, and I've got a guard bike from Beyond Thunderdome. I'm working on the Dune buggy from the opening chase scene of the Road Warrior. And this year, I purchased my dream car, Black on Black Interceptor, which will probably still be a few years before I see it. But it's you know, I've waited 30 years already. What's another couple of years? But you know, I'm also a collector by nature. Again, going back to that OCD personality. So my office is just totally adorned with posters, toys, props, photos, autographs, anything you can think of from the Mad Max films. So soon there's going to be more great things for me to add to my collection. I'm excited about that. I'm hoping that the release of Fury Road will usher in a whole new generation of fans and bring vital new blood into the hobby. Having already seen the new Mad Max film, I was fortunate enough to catch a screening of it while I was in L.A. back in December. I can honestly tell you, it's going in a new direction. No spoilers. Don't worry, no spoilers. It's going in a new direction, and it is one of the most over-the-top films I have ever seen. I walked out of the theater feeling like I needed to catch my breath. I was completely blown away. But this is going to make all of us up our game from this point forward. It's exciting. It's a really exciting time.
When I see the trailer, I just think of costume ideas. I mean, just the possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah, it definitely looks over the top. On the last episode of this podcast, we were talking about how it looks like a mix between like 300 and, you know, the traditional Road Warrior. It's just like over the top, insane, and I'm excited for it. I'm so jealous that you got to see it too.
I was out in LA on some other business, and I got a text message from a friend of mine. Are you free Monday night? And it just so happened that Monday night was the one night I kind of left open for just hanging out in LA and going to Amoeba Music and Hollywood Book and Poster and stuff like that. I said, sure, why? He's like, I've got passes to a screening of Fury Road. You want to go? And I'm like, sure. Tell me when I got to be there. So that was fortuitous.
Wow. All right. Well, to wrap this up, I just want to hear a little bit about your ideas for the future of your character and where you plan to take Lord Humongous from here.
All right. Well, people often ask me, it's kind of funny, if I'm in the new movie, if I have any plans to get on a TV show. I've been asked about using the character to promote a protein bar company that I'm endorsed by. A couple people were pushing for that, but I mean, sadly, it's not a possibility, as the character is the intellectual property of George Miller. I don't have the rights to do anything of that nature. I can just show up and say, look, here I am, and not make any money doing it. But regardless, if you do a Google image search for Lord Humongous, many of the pics that come up will be me. And you can always tell the difference, even though some of the shots we've taken look like scenes from the movie. I've got the Misfits tattoo on my right shoulder. That's the only way you can tell. And that's why I don't cover it up. So people say, that's not you. Yes, it is. Look at the tattoo. But for now, I'll continue to unleash my dogs of war on Wasteland Weekend. The following I have of Screen Accurate Marauders and Vehicles just grows each year. I mean, you want to talk about guys that bring their A game. And we've got the vehicles, all the Marauders. When we roll up to the gates in force, you step into the movie. That's the level that we're bringing it to. I will head to Australia every other year for their events, possibility of attending events in both Japan and Europe that have been talked about. As long as I continue to get the huge reaction that I've been getting, and I can maintain my physique, which is getting harder and harder to do as I head into my mid-40s, but I'll continue to appear as this iconic character. When it's all over, I just hope I'll be able to take a look back and see the mark that I left on the genre, and hope I made it a better place for all the fans.
Wow. That's powerful stuff, man. That's I love that. That's really cool. Well, again, thanks Tank for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. And I'm afraid to know what you're going to do to me if I don't show up. You're holding this to me to go to Wasteland Weekend.
Yeah, you really piqued my interest. Now you're talking about this costume and this vehicle. I'm like, okay, I can't wait to see this.
Yeah, now I have to do it. So
yeah, we'll have to give it the Lord Humongous seal of approval.
All right. Well, thanks again for coming on the show.
Again, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.